Okay, so now we are recording. And I'll record every lecture unless I get a written notice from somebody the first week of school, so this week until Friday. And if you say you don't want me to record lectures because maybe you like to ask questions during lecture and you don't want your voice showing up on the internet, then of course I would respect that and not record lectures. But no one's ever really wanted that to happen. So I suspect the lectures will be recorded and put online for you. And there's links in Blackboard. You have the link in the syllabus and all that kind of stuff. So you should be able to find them without too much difficulty. They're a WAV file. You can stream them off the server or download them to your hard drive, put them into your mobile device if you want to, and listen to them wherever. Burn them to a CD. Anybody still know what a CD is? Something that came after the 8-track? Okay. Not so important anymore. Well, this is kind of a really fortunate class because along with all the online materials and the on-campus lecture and good laboratory facilities and computers and lab and things like that, it also has a component of supplemental instruction, which is free to everybody. And the supplemental instruction leader is here. And for you, that's Crystal Mendoza right here.
Hi, everyone. Okay.
So she's going to say hi and tell you a little bit about SI and some contact information. But eventually I'll get that into Blackboard so you don't have to memorize it.
Hi. So how many of you, show of hands, have been to SI? Okay, quite a few of you. So for those of you who don't, SI stands for Supplemental Instruction, and it's a study group session offered for certain classes that are kind of tough to pass, but if you come to SI, we can help you get through it. It's completely free. It's funded by Typhus College, so you should all take advantage and come. I've been an SI leader for 3 semesters now. I enjoy what I do. I chose to be an SI leader because of how well I did in this class, and by going to SI, it helped me succeed in this class. So if you come to my session, I'll be giving out worksheets, practice quizzes, tests, practice tests, not the real tests. anything to help you prepare for your test in this class and to do well. So this semester, my sessions will be on Tuesday, Thursday, from 9 to 11, so you guys might want to write it down on a piece of paper somewhere where you won't forget. I'm not sure of the room number right now, but I'll give it to you guys on Thursday. We will not be having a session today, but on Thursday before you come to lecture, we will be having a session. So here's my email. It's csmendoza, M-E-N-D-O-Z-A. At cclrc.info. And if you have any questions, you can email me, or does anybody have any questions? Any questions? Oh, and if you go to SI, you can improve your grade from a half a grade to a full letter grade. So if you have like a B, you could get an A, you got a C or a B. There's been studies that shown that. So I hope to see you all there. And
yeah, thank you so much, Crystal. Yeah, so that data is there and available. It clearly shows that students do better when they attend SI regularly. Okay, and I forgot something. Not everybody that is in the room is in the class. So probably there are a lot of students that want to figure out how to get in the class. How do you add the class? And you have to go to the laboratory section that you want to add. And I'm going to go to all of them. So I'll be the instructor there. Come up to me and say, hey, I need an add code for this class. And then I'll take roll call right at the beginning of lab, check to see if there's any no-shows. If there's no-shows, then I'll replace those students from the wait list first. Okay, and then usually I add a couple students per section, and you can get into lab that way. But I can't add students from the lecture because we still have a few seats left in lecture right here, but I just don't know what the availability is going to be like in lab, and that's the rate-limiting place in lab. So go to the lab, and there is a lab today at 1 o'clock. And on Thursdays, there's going to be a lab at 8, and again at 1 o'clock after lecture, so that's how you get into the class. So I couldn't help you get in right now because I don't know if there's space in lab or not. And that's where we're really crowded. If you think it's crowded here, it's even more crowded in lab. Okay. So does anybody have a question about how you add the class? Got to get an add code from me or any instructor right at the very first day of class. And since that's so important to maximize student enrollment, don't be late or don't miss your first class in any class on campus because all classes are impacted. If you miss the first day of class and the instructor is really confused as to whether you want to be in the class or not, and chances are you're going to get dropped, right? So, and for sure that would happen in this class, even if people email me. So if you have a friend that's going to email me and tell me that they're missing their first class, I probably won't even give them a grace period for the first day, because this is just so important for all the students in here, right? So I'm glad you're here. Don't be late to your lab class, even if you got to get some lunch after lecture. Okay, so since this is a hybrid class, your virtual classroom is Blackboard, and that's on the screen on the right. This is your login. You all got a welcome letter from me that tells you how to log into the site, what the URL is, how to find your password and username and stuff like that. Right? If you have problems logging into Blackboard, everybody that's officially registered today should have been able to log into Blackboard. But if not, okay, it's not unusual sometimes that there's a problem logging in, then you got to see me this week or right after lab or right after lecture, and we'll be able to work it out. Okay, I'll be able to change your password, and then I'll log in, and then we know for sure that it's going to work just fine. But here is the URL that's in the syllabus. Oh, if you need a hard copy of the syllabus, I pass them out in lab. Okay, but it's also in Blackboard, and you also had an email copy to you, so you should be pretty familiar with the syllabus. So your username is going to be your student ID number with the ampersand or that at symbol at the beginning of it, so that's real important. And then all the numbers, okay, that make up your student number. See if I can talk and type at the same time. Okay, and your password should be the one that you use in My Gateway to look at how you register and things like that. But sometimes, since Blackboard program is different than the My Gateway program or Banner, sometimes they don't handshake and the password doesn't get passed exactly the same. And so that might be a weak link for some students. And of course, you know that a password has to be what? Exact. So if there's a little glitch in the password, then you won't be able to log into Blackboard. But like I said, we'll be able to fix that. All right, so type in your password. And when you get into Blackboard, there's a whole bunch of different windows that open up. Over here, way on the right, is going to be the classes that you have online content for this semester. Probably you aren't taking as many classes as I am for this semester over here. So you're not anatomy. You're a physiology class. All right, so click on your physiology class right here. Somebody is in this one right here. All right, so then you get an announcement page. So I put some announcements in here, and I just put the welcome letter in as an announcement. And then you have content in this frame over here. So you have the announcements again. You got some instructor information, like my telephone number, my email address, office hours, things like that, syllabus. Most of the files that are text files are in a PDF format, so you need a PDF reader, but I put links in there to go to Adobe to get a free PDF reader if you want. Course information, what do we have in course information? Maybe, the syllabus once again, and the welcome letter. Weekly study plan, okay? Now, you do have to study to get through this class, outside of lecture and outside of mousing around in the web and outside of the lab. All right, so this is in addition to these on-campus and online activities, which is about 12 hours a week. If you want to pass the class, if you want an A or a B, probably you need more than 12 hours, depending on how familiar you are with a couple topics. We're first going to start with some chemistry, so if you have a good chemistry background, then you probably don't need to study 12 hours a week to do that. All right, but if you're a really good chemist, okay, and we get done with chemistry and start getting into some physiology, okay, don't think that you can just spend 5 or 6 hours because that's what you did for chemistry on the next section. Okay, so depending on how familiar you are with a topic, you're going to have to continually adjust how much your study time is. And to help you adjust your study time is this weekly study plan right here. Print that out, read it over, try to find out a week in advance where you're going to be able to find that time to study. Okay, and then see if you can actually make that happen. And if you can't, then go back to your study plan for the next week and modify it so you can get that time eked out in your schedule so that you have plenty of time to study for this class. Because it's no fun walking into a test feeling unprepared, right? Maybe you are prepared, but if you have that feeling you're unprepared, then you just won't do as well on the test as you would otherwise. So working the study plan will help you so that you feel good when you come in to take a test. Here are some various plugins. Like here's the PDF plugin right here. If you don't have Microsoft Word running on your computer, but you might want it, here's a free viewer for Word documents and PowerPoint documents and things like that, so you can download those. Here's a good video player. Sometimes we have videos I think I have more videos for my anatomy class than this one right here, but there are some videos, and the DVIX video player has always worked for me, okay? But if you don't want to do that, and if you want to use Windows Media Player, make sure you update it. I know some people still are trying to use Windows Media Player 3 or 4, and I don't even know what the version is for Windows Media Player. It's probably 12 or 13 or 14. So if you have an old Windows Media Player, sometimes you get the audio file, but not the video file, which is not so good. Sometimes you get the video file with no audio. That's no good either. You want both playing in sync with each other. And it has always worked for me with DVIX. And DVIX is really nice because it doesn't load a lot of spyware or any spyware on your computer. And it's really powerful. Okay. You also want to mess around with these two sites right here to test your internet connection because that's a requirement of the class. Your computer has to be reliable. Your internet connection should be reliable. And these sites right here will diagnose your internet connection speed and how reliable it is. If you're losing information when you're transmitting it to another computer, or if when the computer, another computer is sending you information, does it get lost? So when you go to these sites, make sure you click the Begin Test button and not other kinds of links or buttons that are on that website. If you click Begin Test, then these sites will analyze your computer very nicely. If you click other kinds of advertisements, I don't know what you might get. You might get some spyware or something on your computer. But if you just click Begin Test, then you're going to be good. Okay. And then here are the benchmarks that you should meet. So here's 768 kilobits per second. That's a benchmark from years ago. And probably everybody is up in the megabits region at home. Okay, 5 or 10, maybe 20 or 30. Here on campus, we're close to 100 megabits per second. So this is a really, really old benchmark, but if you can't meet this right here, then you'll have a really hard time viewing and accessing multimedia files on your computer, like graphics and video files and sound files and things like that. All right, and this is also then converted into some extra credit quizzes later on in the class that you can take any time in the class. Pre-lecture reading assignments. Okay, I think I mentioned for you to do this pre-lecture reading assignment right here. Hold them up if you have them. Do you have a pre-lecture reading assignment? Fantastic. All right, so the pre-lecture reading assignment is an assignment that you should do before lecture. So read the chapter, and it's not going to make a whole lot of sense maybe because you haven't had the lecture yet, but go ahead, read through the chapter, answer those questions. And then when you come to lecture, then you'll have a whole lot more fun. You'll understand more of what I'm talking about. Maybe you'll learn just a few key words and terminology that I might have to use in lecture. And so you'll just get a whole lot more out of lecture if you do the pre-lecture reading assignments ahead of time. Okay? And then since I wrote those questions, here is the answer key right here that will pop up periodically through the class. After the lecture, they'll just automatically pop up. Because there's probably many correct ways to answer a question on this pre-lecture reading assignment, but, all right, maybe you're getting a correct answer from an author who's not thinking exactly the same way I am. And since I author the tests in here, it's probably a really good idea to know exactly how I'm thinking, what my viewpoint on a particular topic is, right? So my correct, absolutely correct answers are in these answer keys. So double check, correct your answers. These aren't worth any course points. Right, but students tell me that they find them extremely helpful. Okay, so prepare for lecture doing those. Weekly assignments, that's important. So let's click on that. All right, so every week I've broken the course content down into some chunks, and I have 4 weeks available, actually 3 weeks available right now, and that is the material that's going to be on the first test, all right? So be a little bit careful. Don't do week 3, okay, and then forget to do week 1 and 2 because there are assignments that have a deadline associated with them in all of these weeks, all right? So you can do these in any order that you want, but this is probably a really good order. And if you want to get ahead of schedule, that's why I opened up more than just 1 week at a time. So it's a little bit confusing, but this way you can get ahead in the class if you want to. So that is really helpful. All right, so we've got a folder right here. So there are a bunch of items in week number 1, study of body functions. So you can just click on that. But you notice this icon right here, this dollar symbol. All right, so is it good to have a lot of these, or is it best to have few or none of these things? A lot, right? Dollar sign. This means anytime you see this symbol right here that there is some kind of assignment. Sorry, my mouse was wandering around, or one of them was wandering around. This assignment right here, there is an assignment in here worth course points. All right, so that if you don't do that assignment, that will ding you. That will hurt your grade. And it is the chapter one quiz. It's going to be worth 10 points. So anytime you see this dollar sign symbol, that's something that you have to focus on by the deadline. And here the deadline is February 1st at 11 p.m. All right, so that is going to be Wednesday of next week. Okay, so that's going to be your deadline from now until summer vacation. Every Wednesday at 11 p.m., you'll have an online assignment due, okay, except for spring break. And so this is an independent study part of the class, but it doesn't mean that you can wait to the end of the semester to do it, right? It is still paced. So it's paced independent study. So every week you're going to be brought up to date with the material that you should be abreast of and ready to master, right? So that keeps you from getting behind in the class. And you know what it's like to get behind in a class. It's terrible because not only you have to do the current stuff, but you got to go back and do the older stuff. This is one way to help keep you on pace with your studying in the class. So let's take a look at this right here. There are objectives, right, just right from the book. And it's not every objective in the chapter, but just a selective few. Those are the ones that you should key on. Then we have some animation quizzes. All right, you can take you can look at these animations or videos right here and then take the quiz. And just like in anatomy, okay, you can't just memorize. You have to use the information in order for it to become available to you. And so all of these exercises I put in Blackboard right here is not to pester you and drag you away from your regular life that you're leading, but to actually give you some exercises so that you're actually aware that you're learning information and using it so that when you come in and take a test, you're ready for that particular test. All right, so you don't have to do these things, but it just helps you understand the material. Okay. After the animation, then there's a few multiple choice questions or something like that that just goes over what the video was going over. All right, so no dollar sign. Practice quizzes. All right, here are some more practice quizzes with these links. Sometimes you have to hit a link twice. I'm not sure exactly why that is. All right, in order for it to work. But if it doesn't work the first time, just backtrack and go back and hit it again, and hopefully it will work. But here's the URL. If the links for some reason aren't working with your browser, copy this URL and paste it into the URL line in your browser. All right, so again, these are just practice quizzes. And what I like to do with these practice quizzes right here is copy them and put them on the lecture test. But not all of them, because I can see, 27 questions here, and 20 here, and 30 here, and 30 here, 14 here, 34 there, that you wouldn't have enough time on a test to answer all of these. So it's going to be a select few. But I would still look at all of these. You don't get course points for it, except what? When you come to class to take a lecture test, they might be on the lecture test, and you get a lot of points for them. Okay, again, this just helps you develop a good appreciation for the topics that we're covering. All right, now what about this last page right here? Should we just blow this off? No, because it has what? It has the dollar sign, so this is gold for you. This is where you get course points, and in here somewhere it tells you how many points it's worth, probably 10. You click on that, and the way that quizzes work, online quizzes, they're open notes, open book, and you can take them an unlimited number of times. So you can take them, and maybe you don't get 100%, you're not satisfied that you got a 70 or an 80, you can go back and take it again until the deadline. And the deadline was February 1st, right? So an unlimited number of times up to the deadline. How many times after the deadline? Zero times, right? That is for this particular week, and every week has a little bit different deadline. But it's always going to be what? Wednesday at 11 p.m. But the nice thing of having a number of these modules open at one time, you can get all those quizzes out of the way. Maybe not this week, because you're still learning about Blackboard and other things about the class. But by next week, you can be all the way through the first 3 weeks, and you don't have to worry about that deadline. But don't forget those other deadlines coming up in 3 weeks. Right? So you can get ahead of schedule, but don't get behind schedule. The other nice thing is if you get a low score on a quiz, right, when you go back and take it and you get a higher score, then Blackboard will put your higher score in to your grade book. And always checked the grade book to make sure that Blackboard has scored it and put it into your grade book right now, because Blackboard works really good with a desktop computer. Blackboard works really well with a laptop computer if those computers are running Mozilla Firefox. That's the preferred browser. Okay, if you're using some other browser, I don't know if Safari works on, probably does, on desktops, Macintosh computers, or Chrome or other kind of browsers, Blackboard might not be compatible with it, because these things are changing all the time, and I just can't diagnose and troubleshoot every particular browser and computer system. So the best one is Mozilla Firefox. Nonetheless, please, you're responsible to make sure when you hit the submit button in the quiz that it is compatible with Blackboard. But there's not just desktops and notebooks, right? There's pad computers, and I got a computer right here in my pocket, an iPhone. That's really nice. All right, there's just so many different types of computer systems, I really don't know which ones work with Blackboard, but Mozilla Firefox is probably the most reliable. All right, in terms of mobile devices like smartphones, okay, I do have all my classes in here in this iPhone, which is really nice, and let's see, this class, oh, you have access to your textbook online. Maybe I can demonstrate that to you. I can't show you everything about Blackboard because that will take a while to do that, but we'll talk about it every time a little bit so you become familiar with it. But your textbook is in Blackboard. If you got a new version of it, there's a password. If you go into, maybe I'll show you real quick, Tools, hit Tools, okay, and then McGraw-Hill Higher Education, okay, go to my section right here. So I've paired McGraw-Hill up with Blackboard. Okay, your textbook is available page by page, and you can highlight it just like any kind of electronic textbook that you want. So, do I click this icon? I'm not familiar with it. Ebook, show my library. Okay, so your textbook, you can get your textbook in your smartphone if you want, if it's a Sprint smartphone or if you're running an iOS, which is an Apple product. Okay, other kinds of Android systems other than Sprint, it's not working just yet. Maybe sometime later on in the semester. Oh, what does that look like for somebody that has done your pre-lecture reading assignment? That's your textbook right there, right? And you can highlight, you can put indexes in there, and good luck with that, because I'm not sure I like electronic textbooks yet. Okay, I like a paper textbook. But you guys are like so many generations ahead of me in terms of computers. Maybe you like electronic things more. I'm not sure. All right, so how do we get back? Get back by typing that little, clicking that button. Okay. That's weekly assignments. And usually there is only one assignment per week that is going to be worth course points. And we can quickly look, because this is an instructor account. I can see all the weeks for the class right here, and I only see $1 sign per week. All right, so that just gets you with some discipline every week to accomplish something in the class. So please don't get behind. All right, now for lecture exams, exam study guides. You want to print these things out? Oh, here's some videos in here. Here's the study guide for exam number one. Make sure you're familiar with these exam study guides. So it tells you what chapters at, or what questions at the, all right, let's open this one up and put it someplace. So if you don't always have internet access on your computer, because it's some kind of mobile computer, you might want to download this file on your hard drive so you don't have to have internet access all the time. How would you download this file to your hard drive so you don't have to have internet access? And say you have a PC. I have two mouse buttons on a PC. Macintoshes now maybe have two mouse buttons. But to open that file, you would just click it with your index finger. But if you want to download it, then use your middle finger. We call that right-clicking. All right, so right-click this link, and you get another window, and it will ask you what do you want to do. And let's just say open it in a new window or open it in a new tab. That's not what we want. We want to save it. So you could, some programs say save target as, save link as, save something as something. That's what we want in this browser, save link as. Then I'll left-click it, and then it's going to ask you where you want it to go. Let's put it in my documents, put it in me right here, okay, and then, oh look, here's a little folder for this semester, let's put it in here. It's downloading, this is really high speed internet connection. I don't know if it's already done or if it hasn't even started. I'm not sure. Okay, but so it's not even a megabyte, so it's probably downloaded already. Where the heck do I have this folder? I got to go find that folder. Ah, it's there already. Ah, it's not a PDF file. It's a Microsoft file. Ah, here it is. All right, so you're going to see that's very similar to what you have in Blackboard. Here are the objectives once again. Okay, study the PowerPoint lecture slides from both lecture and lab. You're going to get a really cool set of PowerPoints for lab today that cover homeostasis. And then we have end of chapter, test your knowledge questions. I like 1 through 12. What's really nice about these is that the answers are in the back of the book, so you can check to see if you really understand these questions. And then here are some of the test your quantitative ability. This is what you need a calculator for in this class, right? And some are analyzing graphs, some are actually doing some calculations. So I like these three questions. And some of these questions could end up on the lecture test. Some of these end of chapter multiple choice or matching questions could be on the lecture test. So these are good review materials. And then here's something that might be a little bit different for you. I like to put a graphic component on lecture tests where I photocopy a picture or a diagram from your lab manual or from your textbook, erase the labeling and put that on the test, and then have you from a word bank relabel that figure. Right, so it could be a flow diagram that works really nice for anatomy, that's really obvious, but for physiology sometimes flow diagrams, you have to think a little bit hard to figure out what comes after the next kind of thing in a flow diagram. But most students, if they apply themselves, can get 100% on that part of the test. All right, and so that's maybe 30 or 40% of the test in here. All right, just labeling diagrams. All right, so that's really it in a nutshell. And, oh, I did put some diagrams in here. So here's a diagram with a bunch of question marks. That could be something that you should know what you want to write in that question mark. And the answer key is going to be where? Figure 1.6 in your textbook. All right, so use your textbook as the answer key to these practice test questions right here. All right, as a matter of fact, we're going to go over this one today if I stop talking. I'm not sure if we'll have time to do that. Here's another exam figure. Where would you want to find the key to this one? Figure 1.7. I don't put the page number in your book, but that's the figure number, and you should be able to find it pretty easily in your textbook. All right, so if you know all of that, then you should be able to breathe pretty easy on that first exam that's coming up. But this is just chapter one, so every chapter has their own particular set of questions at the end of the chapter. And these online questions, this is exactly what's in Blackboard for you to practice with. Okay, so don't forget about the study guides. They're really good. Lecture recordings, this is where I'm going to put my lectures. This link right here, after that 1 week is up, the lectures will appear there for you to download and listen to again. Here is information via for your SI. Who is your SI leader? Ah, you saw it right here, there, Crystal Mendoza. Okay, and then we'll update this information, of course, when we get the room number for you. There's free tutoring available in the LLRC. They have limited hours over there, so if the second half of the semester is here and you want to improve upon your grade, they're probably all booked up already. So now is the time to get over there and get a time set up with a tutor because their time just gets used up. And then here are tools that you can find your grades and things like that. All right, so that's just a quick rundown on Blackboard. Sometimes I have extra credit quizzes and lab. And again, it's very graphic-based where you have to draw a diagram out just on a blank piece of paper. And most students do extremely well with those, even though it might seem like a lot of work. It really helps students. Because if you have a picture in your mind, then you can use that picture to help answer questions, like multiple choice questions, true and false questions. So it's really good to have pictures in your mind on the topics that we're talking about. Okay. So I've run into a couple students that need help getting into Blackboard, so maybe see me right after class. I think I have some time right after class. If you're one of those students, then we'll be able to get you in no problem. Anybody have any questions about Blackboard? Okay. If you're going to add the class, you don't have the welcome letter just yet, but once you get that welcome letter, you should be able to log in no problem. Okay. Any questions on Blackboard? Where to find these materials, like the PowerPoint lectures, the pre-lecture reading assignments? So every time you come in, maybe you should just show me, here's my pre-lecture reading assignment. Okay, I won't collect them, but I like to see that you're using them. Okay. Crystal.
Once I find my room numbers,
yeah.
I'd be having my session before lecture. Would you be able to email all the students?
Yeah, I can.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
So then,
as soon as you know.
Emails,
yeah.
Attend.
Yeah. So that's pretty complicated to find a room on campus that's not being used. So somebody's working on that for you. Yeah.
So you would send an email tomorrow if once I get the
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can send an email to everybody in the class. Now, when I send you an email to the whole class, it doesn't contain your CRN number because I'm sending it to everybody. But if you contact me, please give me your CRN number because there's four different classes here. There's four different Blackboard sites. Even though you think this is one class, it's actually four different sites in here. So if you have a question, I won't be able to find you in Blackboard unless I search every single class, which is a hassle. All right, that could take me a half hour or more just to find you. So always send me the CRN number in the subject line of your email. Okay, that helps me tremendously. Then I can go right there and we can find out what we need to do to help you. Okay, that's pretty good. What about any other information about lab? Does anybody need? Anybody have any questions? No? Okay. Well, I have one question for you, but before I get to that, one thing that I want to talk to you about, let's go to the PowerPoint slide right here. All right, so here's PowerPoint slides for today, and I'm just going to click on this thing right here. It's not the first slide. This is, I want to tell you one thing about myself. I've taught this class a whole bunch. It just started with a traditional on-campus class, and then we went to web-enhanced and finally hybrid, and it'll probably stay a hybrid for a long time, probably not a truly online class because you need to do things in lab. All right, but I'll show things, and I'll describe things like I see a blood vessel right here, and then on top of it is another kind of cell. Oh, and I noticed the color of these two things is a little bit different. And color is used a lot in illustrations to make it easy to visualize and to make distinctions and to talk about. But unfortunately, I'm colorblind. Okay, so a lot of times when I'm talking about these slides right here, I won't know like what the color of this structure is. I could guess because it's a blood vessel. Okay, let's pretend it's an artery with nice oxygenated blood in it. So I know there are red blood cells in here, so the color is probably red, right? But I'm not sure I really know that. So a lot of times I might ask you, what's the color of this thing? Like this, I have no idea what color that is. And I could ask you, well, what color is this? So go ahead, tell me, what color is this thing right here? Green, brown,
beige.
Okay, and I realize I'm not the only colorblind person in here. Okay, because we all see colors differently. So I'm not trying to trick you, just that I really don't know what color it is, okay? So that could be a problem. If you forget and I say this is red and it really turns out to be pink and somehow we miscommunicate because I don't see the colors, just be a little careful with that, all right? And the other thing is if I ask you what color it is, just tell me as best as you can and we'll make our way through class. The other thing to make note is that if this diagram is on the test, what color is how many colors do I have to make up a test? Yeah, it's going to be grayscale, right? So don't memorize these figures by color because when it comes time for a test, the colors won't help you, right? Because maybe some students will memorize things by color, but that won't help you on a test, right? So understand anatomy by the relationship of structures to each other and physiologic concepts by some functional state relationship between what you're looking at, not just by the color. Okay. So I think we're about ready to start lecture then. And for this class, I don't think I need dual presentation, so we're just going to do, at least for this lecture, I'll project it just like that. Okay, the study of body function, the first slide describes two different scientific disciplines. And I'm going to go back and even talk about something that should precede physiology. But physiology is a scientific study of function, how your body works. And so that is this topic. And, of course, you could be interested in all kinds of different physiologic systems. But the one that we're going to be most interested in is going to be the human body. All right, so we're going to be mostly interested in how our body functions. But we might want to study how some other animals go about their life processes and then relate it to the human. And that's really how the scientific process really works because a lot of times it's really inappropriate to do scientific studies on people, okay? And I'm sure there are some people in here that think, well, it's really inappropriate to do some kinds of scientific studies on animals, right? And probably I would agree with you, but we can do things with animals that we certainly couldn't do on people, certain experimental procedures, and we take that knowledge and we can save human lives with that, okay? And it has to be used properly, and all scientific studies are approved by committees of scientific experts that can judge the ethics of what you're trying to do, either with people or animal models or even in a test tube, okay? So the study that you're familiar with, you've passed this class already, it's called anatomy, okay? And anatomy is the scientific study of what? The structure of what makes up your body, right? And that's really fundamental to understanding physiology. So don't forget any of your anatomy for this particular class. So keep your anatomy books. You might have to refer to them in a little bit. So there's a relationship between structure and function that I'll mention all the time, okay? And humans have sort of an interesting hand, as an example. What can you do with your hand that most, like your dogs and cats at home, can't do? Okay, you have an opposable thumb so that you can grab things and manipulate objects like a pencil and paper and food and things like that, because you have specially designed joints in your thumb and your metacarpals, okay, in your hand that allow you to perform that kind of motion. All right, so anatomy is really important. That will determine the physiology. So, and if you change the structure of something, what happens to the function of that particular structure? It's going to change as well. And we're going to see that at a gross anatomic level. We'll see it at a molecular level in this class as well. So if you change the structure of a molecule, you're going to change its function inside the body. All right, so we're going to look at that normal physiology. So anatomy is fundamental and a basic prerequisite for physiology. The other thing is chemistry. Chemistry is also fundamental to physiology. Right, you can understand chemistry without knowing any physiology whatsoever, but you can't understand a lot of physiology without knowing something about chemistry, because it's a basic building block for physiology. So I always recommend that somebody should take a college-level chemistry class before physiology. If you want to get the best possible grade, and in an easy fashion, it's best to take chemistry first before physiology. It's not necessary, but if you want to, that's the easiest approach, okay, to do that. Okay, pathophysiology is how the physiologic processes are altered by disease or injury. Well, how does a physiologic process become pathological? What's a really easy way of just kind of understanding that? What could change in your body to make a process a pathophysiologic instead of just normal physiology? You can change, yeah, you can get sick by changing the structure of something. Okay, when you change the structure of something that's normal in your body, it becomes pathophysiologic. For instance, you break a bone in your arm. That's easy to see. But for instance, maybe you change your body changes the structure of a chemical inside your body, or it changes the structure of a receptor on a cell membrane, then it will turn into a disease process. Okay, so we're always going to relate it mostly to some kind of structural change inside the body. Okay, this book that you have is pretty cool, because all of the information inside your book is presented there as a result of scientific method. All right, so there is no conjecture. You might read some things that are really far out, hard to appreciate inside your book, but it has all been worked out with the scientific method, so it is something that you can really count on. I'll probably say things in class that hasn't been backed up by scientific method. I'll give you my impressions about something that you can just put away in the back of your mind, but I'll always identify it that it hasn't been shown to be true in a number of cases with the scientific method, but it's a good possibility. So let's talk about scientific method a little bit. Scientific method has a number of steps. We're not too rigorous in talking about all the steps in here, because this is not truly a science class, right? We're just learning some physiology, right? First, you form a testable hypothesis about your observations. So as you go about your daily life, you might see some kind of repeating pattern about some kind of phenomenon. Like you might take your temperature every day, and you'll see that it's fairly consistent. And you might say, oh, well, gee whiz, most living people have a temperature within this range, which should be about, what, 98.6, okay, degrees Fahrenheit. And if your temperature goes down to 50, you probably don't hang out with any people with their body temperature down at 50 degrees, right? So you might say, ah, guess what? I bet the human body has to be at around this temperature, 98.6, to be alive. And if it deviates far from that, I bet that's a disease state, okay? So that could be a hypothesis, but a hypothesis, right, is not something that you should really believe in. It's just a guess at this particular point, right? So a hypothesis is a guess. Now, how you turn that into something that you can really trust? You have to do some experiments. So you have to conduct and analyze experiments to test the hypothesis. So maybe right above your slide, in hypothesis right here, you should write down guess. It's just a guess as to how something functions. Oh, bless you, bless you. Okay? And then you perform these tests and look at the results of the tests and you draw conclusions about whether or not the results support this hypothesis. Right? You should walk around everywhere and measure the temperature in all your friends, okay? Whether it's the summertime or wintertime, after meal, before meals, okay? And then when you analyze the results, right, then you'll be able to develop a theory. So a theory is a generally recognized explanation for the real world on how it works. Right? So, and a theory is not a guess. Right? It's a general statement explaining some kind of natural phenomena based on a proven hypothesis. When we say proven hypothesis, that means that you had to do some kind of experiments in order to show whether that hypothesis is true or not. Okay, so I know a lot of times we might get together with friends and talking about a particular topic and somebody says, oh, I have a theory about something, and you talk about this theory a little bit, and everybody kind of sits around and says, oh, yeah, that sounds reasonable, okay? But was it really a theory when you just get together and bat ideas around? Is that a theory? It's not a scientific one, that's right, because it's a hypothesis, right? It's just your best guess. But that's okay, right, because that's where theories come from. They start with a hypothesis, which is a guess, but then it's got to be backed up, proven with scientific method to see if it's true or false, right? It's just that I think a lot of times we say, oh, I have a theory about something, because it's really hard to say, oh, I have a hypothesis about something, especially during happy hour, right? Because it's just too big a word. But in most cases, what you're hearing from somebody is a hypothesis, which is what? An unproven guess about how something works in the world, right? A theory is something you can count on because the results have been reproduced by many different laboratories all over the world, many different groups. They've been published and they've been analyzed and scrutinized. Sometimes we call that vetting, right? And nobody can find something wrong with that particular hypothesis. Okay. So what about an experiment? In order for it to be a true scientific experiment, an experimental, there have to be at least two groups of, for instance, people. Since this is a human physiology group, let's just consider maybe we want to bring a new drug to a market, right, to help people. So in order to see if it really helps people, we need to do some experiments. So there's got to be two groups, an experimental group that gets the active drug that you're interested in and a control group, somebody that doesn't get the active drug that the experimental group does. But something special about this control group right here, okay, when you give a control group, you have to give the control group the exact same experimental conditions as the experimental group right here. All right? And so what does that mean? Well, let's just say we're going to be interested in looking at some hormone replacements for people. And those kinds of hormones typically have to be dissolved in oil. They don't dissolve in water, like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone don't dissolve in water. They dissolve in oil. And then you have to use an injection because if people swallow those drugs and the stomach deactivates them, so it's an injection. So the control group has to get a shot in order, because maybe just the process of giving an injection to somebody has a psychological effect, which is going to produce some kind of result in a person, and we need to subtract that from our understanding of what the actual drug is doing. Okay, but since the experimental group is getting the pharmaceutical agent in oil, because that's where it dissolves, what does the control group have to get? Not just the shot, but also the plus the oil. Yeah, we call that the placebo, right? They actually have to get the oil as well, minus the active agent, because the oil, we call that the vehicle, that oil by itself is going to have some effect inside the body. And that oil will act like some hormones in some people, right? So the control group right here has to get exactly the same thing, right? Same time of day, same size needle, okay? Same vehicle as the experimental group right here, minus, for instance, the active ingredient, which would be the hormone, for instance. So that's a lot of work that you have to go through, okay? And here's another one, okay? And that these shots should be administered blindly to people. So whoever administering the shot should know who is in the control group or who's in the experimental group, because just by your actions or the way you interact with a patient, for instance, is going to have some effect on their physiology as well. Okay, and when you analyze the data from these two groups, who's ever analyzing the data have to perform the analysis blindly, right? So they don't know who's in the experimental group, who's in the control group, because they could introduce bias into the results that you're trying to get. Okay, and then the analysis should be done using statistics, which is another unbiased method for analyzing results. So just using mathematical methods is very important, and again, it takes observer bias out of the analysis. All right, so doing scientific experiments is a bit complicated, as you can see, because you have to do all of these different groups. Okay, but why do we want to go through scientific method to show something? What is the purpose of scientific method? This is probably the most important thing that I want you to appreciate. Why do we go through all that trouble? Not just because you're busy and you're earning a big paycheck when you do that, okay? But why is that? What's the purpose of the scientific method? Yeah, to find the truth, okay? So that's real important. It's to give you reliable information. It's to give you information that you can count on, okay? And that's real important, because if you have reliable information, then you can build on that. You can get more reliable information and even more and more and more and come up with new and innovative treatments that help people. All right, so if it's not according to the scientific method, there could be bias, right? There could be misrepresentation in the information, and it's something that you can't count on. So what can you count on more, a hypothesis or a theory? A theory is much more important, and that's what you have in your book. You have very few hypotheses in your book. You have theory that's backed up by scientific evidence, right? So that's real good. And if I present some information to you to make it fun, it's not always going to be theory, but I'll tell you that it's a hypothesis, right? Just a guess on my part. Okay, your book goes into scientific method just a little bit more, so please read your textbook, but that's a pretty good introduction to scientific method. But there is something going on. There's a big political process that's happening right now, right? And people are polling everybody. How would you vote? Who would you vote for? And the results are presented on TV and radio all the time, and they say, this is a scientific study. Okay? Well, guess what? That is just pure polling information that has really nothing to do with science whatsoever. But science is kind of misused all the time. So be aware, there's a big difference between hypothesis and theory, and between true scientific method and just pure polling information. Okay, even though it might be done in some kind of systematic way, it's really not science. All right, our first important topic, homeostasis. This is the topic of your lab this week as well. Homeostasis just means staying the same. Okay, homeo just means similar. Stasis means staying the same. This is a term that was coined to describe the internal state inside people. And it's actually a fairly complicated term. We'll describe it, and you'll just have to think about it for quite a while to get a good appreciation of what homeostasis means. But let's start talking about it. Homeostasis is the condition in which a number of physiologic parameters inside your body, and some good physiologic parameters would be blood pressure, the pH, and does anybody know what pH is a measure of? The acidity or alkalinity inside your body, and that really controls a number of chemical reactions. So chemical reactions are very sensitive to pH, and basically your body is just a whole set of chemical reactions. And so homeostasis is a condition where blood pressure, pH, temperature, you know what temperature is, fluids, right? And many other factors, thousands of other factors of the inside of your body, the internal environment, are maintained within a range of values suitable to support life. It doesn't mean that your pH has to be absolutely constant or your temperature or blood pressure absolutely constant, but it can't fluctuate too much, right? It can fluctuate only within a narrow range that will support life processes. Right, so it's a dynamic state where everything is changing, right? Nothing is absolutely constant. So if everything is changing, that's a dynamic state, right? So blood pressure can go up and down. That will help regulate temperature, which is going up and down, right? So all these parameters are constantly changing and adjusting to changing internal and external conditions, right, to make the conditions inside your body suitable to support life. So, for instance, when you get cold, maybe this is a big refrigerator that we walked into. None of us are wearing big parkas right here. And all of a sudden, our body's temperature starts to change and you start to get cold. What is your body going to do? It's going to start to shake, right? And those muscles then are going to produce heat, which will warm your body back up. All right, so that means that your muscle contraction is not absolutely constant. It's going to change, right? And as you get colder, your muscles are going to contract to warm you up. So homeostasis is sort of interesting. Let's talk about some aspects of homeostasis. So your different parts of your body have to be able to communicate with each other to tell if something is changing, right? To respond to various kinds of things. So there are long-range reflexes and short-range reflexes. Let's look at some long-range reflexes and talk about some compounds that will help do that. Okay, so for instance, here we have a cell. And it's going to secrete a hormone. So since it's secreting a hormone, what could you tell me about this cell right here? What is this cell? It's a gland, right? Because it's secreting something, okay? But now from anatomy, you know there are two major classes of glands. What are the two major classes of glands? Endocrine and exocrine, yeah. So we'll be classifying a lot of stuff in here all the time, and there are various schemes for classifying, but that's a really good place to start, exocrine or endocrine. All right, so a hormone is secreted by an endocrine gland, not an exocrine gland. What's the difference between endocrine and exocrine besides this hormone right here? The definition has to do with? Okay, the method at which this signaling compound finds its particular area in the body where it wants to go. If it's distributed by the blood, it's an endocrine gland. If this product right here, the hormone, is distributed by a duct, then it is an exocrine gland, right? But since this is a hormone that ends up in the blood, this right here is an endocrine gland, not an exocrine gland. So this cell secretes the hormone, it goes into the blood. Once it's in the blood, where does it go? Everywhere in the body, right? Really far distances compared to the size of this hormone right here. And then it's going to go everywhere. And this right here is a target cell or a target tissue. This hormone will change the physiology of this cell as long as this target cell has something. In order to respond to this hormone, does anybody know what this target cell has to have? Okay. For instance, if I have a flashlight and I turn it on right now, okay, in order for you to see that light, what do you need? You need a receptor. You need a photoreceptor to perceive that light, okay? The same thing for this target cell. In order for it to perceive this hormone, it has to have a receptor for it, okay? If it doesn't have a receptor, then it's going to be euphemistically blind to this particular hormone. It won't be respond to it at all. All right, so we're going to talk a lot about receptors in this class. All right, but that's long-range signaling by this hormone right here. All right, a nerve cell uses chemical signals as well. We're going to say this is a long-range reflex because here is a neuron, does anybody know what this part of a neuron is? That's an axon, right? And that's really long. That could be a foot long, or it could be a meter long. But this cell right here is only going to be a couple of microns in diameter, so that's a huge distance. All right, so there are electrical signals that move down this axon, and when the electrical signals reach this axon terminus, it's going to release a neurotransmitter, which then diffuses across the synapse, and it's going to affect this cell right here. Okay, it's going to change the physiology of this cell right here if it has what? It has to have a receptor, just like these target cells over here. It has to have a receptor which can then bind the neurotransmitter, which will then change the physiology of the cell. So a hormone is secreted by an endocrine gland cell. A neurotransmitter is secreted by a neuron. Okay, so there's a bit of difference right there. Okay, it's still long range. But you know what else we can have? Here is a neuron, and we can see the axon is pretty short. It can be stimulated electronically, and here is a nerve impulse coming down to the axon terminus. It's going to release a signaling compound, right? But this particular signaling compound is not going to diffuse across a synapse, right? It's going to get picked up by the blood and delivered to a target tissue. That target tissue will respond if it has a receptor. Okay. Now, what the heck is this signaling compound right here? It kind of looks like a neurotransmitter because it came from a neuron, but it also kind of looks like a hormone because it's being delivered by the bloodstream. Okay, so what would you call this thing? A neurotransmitter or a hormone? Well, you know what? Now the classification scheme breaks down a little bit, and it's actually acting as both. And so really what we want to call this thing is a neurohormone, and indeed that's what it is. Okay, but again, it's a long distance to the target cell from the cell that's stimulating it, so it's a long-term, it's a long-range reflex nonetheless. Okay, so we can have hormones, we can have neurotransmitters to maintain homeostasis, or other special kind of compounds like neurohormones. Okay, and we'll learn some examples of those things in the class. Short-range control can be produced by signaling compounds. Here's a local cell right here, and it secretes some kind of signaling molecule, and it goes to a nearby target cell. We're going to call that a paracrine agent, right? That's for short-term regulation. So this cell, the local cell, is going to control the physiology of this target cell that's very close to it via a paracrine agent. We'll learn some paracrine agents, right? And an autocrine agent is when a cell, right, secretes a signaling compound, and it could go to a target cell, but it also goes back and binds to a receptor on the cell that secreted it. And it then is going to change the physiology of the cell that secreted the signaling compound, and we call that an autocrine agent. Right? But in some cases, an agent right here can be a paracrine agent and an autocrine agent at the same time. That certainly can happen. Right? It all depends on what? If there is a receptor on this local cell for this signaling compound, then it's going to be an autocrine agent. If the receptor is only on the target cell, we're going to call it a paracrine, and then some cases there's going to be receptors on the local cell and at other cells, and then it's going to have both of those characteristics. Okay? But in every case, there has to be what? A receptor on these cells in order to change the physiology. Okay. So let's take a look at this slide right here. So we have a measure of some kind of physiologic parameter. Let's just say maybe this is temperature, for instance. And in homeostasis, remember, it means that the physiologic parameters are not absolutely constant. They can vary up and down, okay, as we see right here. We see things going up and going down. And the dotted lines right here, oh, the bracket doesn't really show that. Okay, let's look at the bracket. This is the normal range for this particular parameter. So maybe blood pressure can go up, okay, but it shouldn't continue to go up and up and up, because if it gets into this region here, or for sure above the dotted line, that would be a disease state. It's a healthy state if blood pressure remains within what? The normal range right here, or body temperature, or pH, right, or hundreds of other kinds of things. Okay, so homeostasis is the maintenance of a state of dynamic constancy. So temperature goes up, but means it also comes down. And if you take the average of all these values, you get a normal value right here. Right? So the set point is the average of all of these small deviations. Right? And so we call this this process homeostasis being maintained by a negative feedback loop. So if you see a physiologic parameter going up, but then it goes back down toward the average value or the set point, we know negative feedback is taking place as opposed to positive feedback. All right, so we're going to have to talk more about that. So let's continue talking about that. In order to have feedback loops, okay, let's analyze what a feedback loop is made of, the pieces of a feedback loop. And the very first thing that I want you to write in on your slide, your book is just a little bit sloppy in how they discuss the topic. Okay, a feedback loop always starts with a stimulus. So write in stimulus right here. Okay, and a feedback loop always ends in a response. So maybe put a little markdown over here. So stimulus is going to produce a response. All right, but in order for your body to detect a stimulus, what does it need? It needs a sensor or a receptor, right? So here is some kind of stimulus. We're going to call that X, and there's an increase in X. All right, now what can you tell, since it's a physiologic parameter, what should you tell me about X? Can it go from zero or minus to a million positive? Okay, what kind of, what if it's a physiologic parameter in your body, what should you expect in order to maintain life inside your body? It can vary, but how much? A lot or little? Only a little bit, right? So X can go up and down. In this particular case, it goes up, and your body knows it's going up, this particular parameter. This could be pH or temperature, because there is a sensor right here. So the sensor measures what's happening to this parameter, and then it sends that information to the integration center. And in most cases, the integration center is going to be in your brain someplace, right? But your brain, how does it know what is happening with X right here? Within the integration center, there is a set point. Your brain knows what the average value should be. All right, so then the brain knows, well, X is going higher than it should. The integration center, since it's comparing this, the stimulus to what it should be, okay, then has to make a decision on what to do. Because what should happen to X? It should, the brain should then force it to go back down to the set point or that average value. So it's got to make a decision what to do, but the process doesn't stop right there. The brain has to share the information with other parts of the body. So here it sends different information out another nerve pathway that's leaving the brain to an effector organ, which is going to counteract the effects on the stimulus right here. So we see a little down arrow, all right? And then since we have X here and X here, these things you can add together, right? Or they, so they can add or they can subtract. And if they subtract from each other, if the response subtracts from the stimulus, we call that negative feedback. All right? So that brings the response back down to the set point that produces a healthy, disease-free state inside somebody's body. So negative feedback is usually the good kind of feedback to have, even though we call it negative. Why do we call it negative? Because the response subtracts from the stimulus, right? So it's just a mathematical operation right there. All right, and these little arrows right here, you should probably be able to list or annotate what they are. What do we call a nerve fiber that's bringing information into the central nervous system? Afferent, what's another name for afferent? Sensory. Right? And if you say afferent, that's fine. That's probably how it should be pronounced. I just say afferent in class in case there's an echo or something. Okay? Because it sounds a whole lot like what?
Efferent.
All right? And I say efferent in class. So you don't, in case I'm speaking too fast or something. So here is an afferent pathway. Here's an efferent pathway. So here's the efferent pathway to the effector organ. Okay? Those are all things with the negative feedback loop. All right, so here we see some physiologic parameter increasing, moving away from normal, moving away from the set point. All right, but then all of a sudden there's a change in the status of that parameter and it goes back down toward the set point. All right, so what kind of feedback loop, just by looking at this up and down motion right here, is taking place? Is it positive feedback or negative feedback? Okay, it's negative feedback. So if it was positive feedback, okay, what would happen to this curve? It would continue to deviate farther and farther and farther away from the set point. So it's easy to tell, right, just by graphing out this parameter whether positive feedback is working or negative feedback is working. And if it's negative feedback, that signals a healthy disease-free state. If it's positive feedback, that signals a disease state. Okay. The other thing that I want you to appreciate is that, okay, this parameter right here, which we call X, is it constant over time? It's changing. It's going up and it's going down. Okay? The important thing is that it's controlled within this normal range, this small range that is able to maintain life. All right, so there's nothing that's really absolutely constant. If all the physiologic parameters inside your body are absolutely constant, how are you? Then you're dead. You're supposed to be changing and adjusting to things all the time, okay, through these negative feedback mechanisms. So here is here's a nice figure that's not in your textbook, okay? I don't know if those clocks on the wall are right. They're almost right. All right, this is from a different textbook, but it's a really good diagram, and you should just memorize this thing with only one modification that I have right here. What does a response loop always start with? A stimulus, and you can appreciate a stimulus if you have a sensor or receptor, but that information doesn't do you any good until it can get to the brain, right, or integration center. So here's an afferent pathway taking that information into the integration center, and still, it doesn't matter very much, because what does the integration center have to do with that information? It's got to compare it to the set point. So on your diagram, write in set point right here. The integration center has a set point. And if the stimulus is exactly the same as the set point, what's the decision that your brain makes, or the integration center? If the information says that you should be at 98 degrees, and you are at 98 degrees, what's the decision of the integration center?
Nothing.
Hey, I don't know, nothing, right? Everything's great, no change. But if your temperature is different from the set point, because the integration center is analyzing and making the decision on what to do, then it's going to send a signal out an efferent pathway to an effector organ, which is going to produce a response, okay, and hopefully we're in a disease-free state. The response will feed back to the stimulus so that it's going to subtract from it. So if you're cold, the response is shaking or contraction of muscles that will heat your body up. That's going to subtract from the initial stimulus. So if it subtracts from the initial stimulus, what kind of feedback loop is this? How many different kinds of feedback loops can there be?
Two.
It can be positive or negative. In this particular case, it's going to be negative because it subtracts from the stimulus. All right. So that's some really good basic information of homeostasis. It means that parameters inside your body are not constant. They're varying all the time. Each are changing so that none of the parameters have to change a lot. So think of homeostasis as like a dance of parameters inside your body where everything is moving around all the time. Okay? Oh, and I didn't send the sign-in sheet around, but it's too late for the sign-in sheet for today. All right, but you got to go to lab, sign the sign-in sheet in lab, or you'll be dropped from the class. See you Thursday. So we got to finish up some slides, and then we'll move on to chapter 2. Yeah. But in lab, this is what you're going to get. So you'll have to reproduce this on that.
So it's a quiz then?
It's an extra credit quiz.
So
you do have an extra credit quiz at the end of lab today. And I think this is it, but this is what you'll get to draw it on. So just on a blank piece of paper.
Kathleen's back here.
I have three. Yeah, I have Kathleen, I have Octavian Lee, and I have Raj Sidhu. Yeah. That's right, not for lab. Just what class you're registered for. Yeah.